What's up, y'all? Welcome back to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Jackson. I don't want to miss out the opportunity to tell you about sportshealth.com/SMB, where you can win a $50 gift certificate from Sports Health. So sportshealth.com/SMB, check them out. Make sure you listen, get the code. So the code for October will be Gideon, G-I-D-E-O-N. Gideon, G-I-D-E-O-N. That's the name of my third son. So using my family for the offer codes for the first 3 months with our deal with sportshealth.com. Again, Jeremy Jackson, Sports Medicine Broadcast. Some of these episodes are coming from SWATA, which is a conference for District 6 of the NATA. Some of them are coming from the Memorial Hermann Sports Medicine Update. And some are coming from other workshops and whatnot we did throughout the summer. Check it out. Let me know what you want to hear, and we'll work on it throughout the school year. Thanks.
Just a little bit about me. I'm originally from Chicago. I went to University of Iowa for undergrad medical school. I went back to Chicago at Loyola. My orthopedic surgery residency I did in Cincinnati for 5 years, and then I did a sports medicine fellowship in Miami. So I was fortunate enough to kind of take care of some NCAA and professional teams. All right, so today, you know, the agenda is we'll kind of start from the head and work our way down to the toes, kind of doing the most common things that we'll run into on the field. And just a good thing to note, when we're talking about our anatomy, when you're talking about a joint dislocation, it's in relation to the distal joint to the proximal joint. So if somebody has a knee dislocation, if the tibia goes backwards, then it's a posterior dislocation because the tibia is distal and it went backwards in relation to the femur. And then our joints, of course, are stabilized by ligaments. And when you have dislocations, you'll have tearing of those ligaments and plus or minus bony fractures or avulsions that may happen. So starting with shoulder dislocations, these can be some of the most common. And up to 95% of these occur anteriorly. Mechanism is usually an anterior force on the arm during abduction external rotation, kind of this position. So you can get a lot in the tackling type positions. If they're not tackling towards the body and they're tackling away from their body, the arm is very weak away from the body. So they'll kind of get this motion here and the shoulder pop out of the socket. Also, if you guys watched the NBA playoffs, you saw Kevin Love dislocate his shoulder. You can actually get it from a traction mechanism as they were fighting for a rebound, which takes a lot of force. When this occurs, you're going to have tearing of the ligaments in the labrum in the shoulder, which can cause instability. And then, good thing to know, if you're talking about someone who dislocated their shoulder above the age of 40, you also got to worry about rotator cuff tears, which can be very common. So on your exam, you're going to see like a big anterior prominence on the shoulder because, again, 95% the humeral head is anterior to the glenoid. And then you'll see that increased acromio-humeral distance. What I'm talking about is you look at Kevin Love there, you can see, you know, that's not normal. So you can see a big gap underneath that acromion there. So you have that increased distance and, of course, inability to rotate or move the shoulder because it's not in the socket. And literally, there's so many ways to reduce a shoulder. You'll find 100 ways on Google. But, you know, some of the more common ones, I like to, when there's a reduction to be done, I like to just kind of get my thumb right on the dislocated part. So if you see that anterior prominence, I like to get my thumb right on the thing, you know, try to pull some lateral traction on the arm and just kind of push the ball back into the socket. You'll see pictures of this, you know, traction, counter-traction method. You get your buddy, throw a towel in the axilla going this way, and then you just kind of try to pull the shoulder distally. If you don't have somebody, you can even stick your foot in the armpit, and that'll be kind of the towel as you're trying to gently pull that arm down and fatigue the muscles to get it back in the socket. And then you can also hang a weight here known as the Stimson maneuver. Basically, you just let them hang out over a table with about 5 pounds hanging on their arm, and you just wait till the muscles fatigue enough and the shoulder will just kind of fall back into the socket. If this occurs, you're able to get it reduced. You know, just place them in a sling is just fine. Moving on to elbow dislocations, these most commonly are going to be posterior. And it makes sense because the mechanism is usually from an axial loader trying to catch yourself with your arm when you're falling. So the olecranon will move posterior to the distal humerus. And you also sometimes have this varus valgus load as well. So you're tearing most likely the lateral collateral ligament along with the capsule to allow the thing to dislocate out of the socket. On your exam, you're going to have obvious deformity and inability to move the arm. And then for your reduction maneuver, again, I personally like to just, you'll see that a prominent olecranon, you know, posterior, I just get my thumb right on there, give it a little bit of traction, try to get it right over the edge of that distal humerus. You can get a buddy to try to hold the arm still while you, again, are pulling traction distally to try to get it back over the distal humerus. And then whenever you relocate an elbow, the elbow is most stable inherently when it's in flexion and in pronation. So try to splint these in flexion and pronation, and you're more successful to keep it reduced so you get it seen by the doctor. And then moving on, distillated finger dislocations. These most commonly occur at the PIP or DIP joints. These can occur dorsally. Dorsally is definitely more common than volarly, but it depends on the mechanism being either hyperextension or hyperflexion. And then you can see lateral dislocations too. These are very common in basketball, very common in football, because you get the, you know, snapping at hands and things like that. They'll just come back out to the sideline with one of their fingers going the wrong way. So on your exam, you'll see an obvious deformity of the finger. Reduction technique. Again, I like to just put my thumb on the dislocated part, pull a little bit of traction, try to guide it back to where it belongs. Alternatively, you can do this lean back technique where if they're dislocated, they'll just kind of give you their fingers and lean back. And basically all you're providing is an axial load to try to relocate it back into place. And, you know, the thing to keep in mind is it's not very hard to relocate them, because, you know, the reason why yours and I joints aren't popping out of sight because our ligaments aren't intact. But when you have these injuries, the ligaments are torn. So these things want to be reduced. So you don't have to put too much force to get them back in. And then my rule for these is usually with the finger dislocations, they're pretty inherently stable. I usually just buddy tape them and I'll let them go back and play. I think it's a good idea to see like an orthopedic surgeon afterwards, at least get an x-ray at some point. But usually they're okay enough to, you know, these are inherently stable. They can go back on the field the same event. Okay, moving on to something that's pretty rare, hip dislocations. But we all, of course, know Bo Jackson, unfortunately, occurred one of these. These most commonly are going to occur posteriorly, and very high force involved in these. So you have a flexed knee hitting the ground in a flexed position. These also, you know, most commonly occur in an MVC with a dashboard injury. You can imagine sitting in a seat and then getting hit by the dashboard. The hip pops posteriorly, but this dislocated my hip on that one. So these are important because the hip has a very tenuous blood supply, retrograde. Just getting a little bit into the science. It's mostly given its vascular supply by the medial femoral circumflex artery. So long story short, these need to be reduced as soon as possible, or else you're at risk of getting into avascular necrosis, which is unfortunately what Bo Jackson went through, because it wasn't properly found on time and reduced. So on your exam, you're going to see on the field, they'll kind of have this flexed, internally rotated position. They won't be able to really rotate it. And then they'll have a leg length discrepancy. It'll be shorter than the other side because it's posterior to the socket. And the reduction of these is kind of fun. So what you want to do is you get your buddy to hold the pelvis down, basically. And then what I do is I just kind of take the leg in my crotch and then kind of exactly like that guy's doing, I just kind of lean back. And, you know, all these reductions are not like forceful sudden moves. These are very slow, just kind of let the muscles fatigue until it gives out and then it pops back in. And then you'll definitely hear a clunk on these ones. Okay, moving on to patellar dislocations. So virtually every time these are going to occur laterally, okay? They can occur with or without trauma. So, you know, with trauma, you can get a direct impact onto the patella, knocking it laterally out of the groove, tearing the medial MPFL. And then you can also get it non-contact, like a baseball, classically a right-hand batter swinging. His whole body rotates, but his patella lags behind. And, you know, his anatomy may be that he has a shallow groove or something like that, but it can dislocate laterally as well. On the exam, you'll have an effusion of the knee, if you get to a little bit later, not immediately. You'll have pain medially because you have the torn medial structures for it to allow it to dislocate laterally. And you'll have an apprehension sign as well. A lot of times these will spontaneously reduce themselves. So they'll be like, something just happened to my knee. I don't know what happened. Most people think it's like an ACL, but it was actually a lateral patellar dislocation. And then if it's stuck laterally and it's obvious, you know, get your thumb on there and just kind of give it some medial force and slowly bend, extend the knee until the thing pops back into place. And then these you can just place in a knee immobilizer and they're done for the day, obviously. Okay, so a patellar dislocation, very different from a knee dislocation. These are far more serious, okay? This is the femur tibia joint dislocating. Five different types of knee dislocations depending on, you know, anterior, posterior, medial, lateral, or posterolateral. Anytime you have a knee dislocation, at least two, if not more, of the ligaments, the major ligaments, ACL, PCL, MCL, LCL, are torn every time. There's no other way to dislocate the knee. And, you know, these are one of the few what we consider can be orthopedic emergencies. You want to make sure that you check a good neurovascular exam. You know, try to get this thing reduced as soon as you can. And we'll kind of go into that. The reason is because you have the popliteal vessel, which is kind of kinked behind the knee here. So, you know, any way that the bones are misaligned is really putting a lot of pressure on that popliteal vessel. So if it doesn't tear immediately, it can clot over the next 24 hours or so. So these require a hospital admission every time. So on your exam, you're going to have an obvious deformity again. In a reduction maneuver, again, this knee is blown up. You know, this knee is blown. So just gentle traction on the knee. Try to get somebody to hold the thigh and then just kind of pull gentle traction and get you'll feel the thing give and come back out. Very few times can it not be reduced on the field. There's a few times in the posterolateral ones where the medial femoral condyle actually buttonhole through the capsule that's not reducible unless you're in the OR, but that's very rare. And then you want to place these in a knee immobilizer, and then these should go to the emergency room for evaluation at the hospital because they're very serious. And, you know, there's people that, when they haven't gotten these properly taken care of, have lost their leg because they've suffered an injury to the popliteal vessel and the blood supply is gone, and that's a major problem. So just to recognize that, that's very serious, and that needs to get to the hospital. Okay. Going distally to ankle dislocations, these commonly occur with rotational varus valgus force to the foot or a sudden strike like that. And these can place a lot of tension on, again, the neurovascular structures. Not only that, but, I mean, if you look at that foot on the bottom left, I mean, that foot is blue, and look at that skin. That skin is white. I mean, that skin can die very soon because there's too much pressure on that skin. So you want to get these reduced as soon as you can. So you'll see an obvious deformity. Reduction maneuver, again, you know, just pull axial traction. If the leg is, you know, if the foot is going medially, give it a little lateral force. If it's going lateral, give it a little medial force. And then you want to place these in a sugar tong splint, not just like a plate. And let's say the foot came out laterally like that. Well, when you put your splint on, exaggerate it, go the other way with the splint, because the foot wants to go back out laterally. All those ligaments are torn, so you kind of want to guide it the other way to give it a little bit more stability, and so it won't dislocate again on you before it's evaluated by the physician. Going down to the foot dislocations, these can occur anywhere along the foot, including the subtalar joint, hind foot, midfoot, forefoot, and toes. And again, these can occur with fracture dislocation. You can get bony avulsions or injuries as well. Subtalar dislocations, that's the dislocation of the talocalcaneal joint. Usually the calcaneus is going to be either medial or lateral. You kind of treat these like the ankle dislocation. So just traction and, you know, guide it medial or laterally, and then put in that sugar tong splint, guide the splint the other way so it doesn't want to redislocate out. We've all heard of Lisfranc fracture dislocations. That's at the tarsal, metatarsal joint. You know, sometimes just picking up the toe, because all those ligaments, are torn, it's very unstable. Just picking the toe up will relocate some of the foot or toe injuries. Again, if you see like a prominence, use your thumb to guide it over the edge. A big fan of using the thumb for reductions too. And then, you know, with toe dislocations, they're treated very similar to hand. Again, you just pick up the toe a lot of times. Those ligaments are torn, so the thing will reduce. All right, so, you know, in conclusion, you should try to relocate joints relatively quickly because of the stress that they place on neurovascular structures along with the skin. Again, don't forget the skin. And then technical point, when you're doing reductions, it's not a quick, steady, you know, muscle move at all, okay? It's very slow, it's steady. You're basically trying to fatigue the patient's muscles where they give out and let the thing just reduce on itself. So that's an important thing when you're doing reductions. It's a very slow, steady, it's not a very fast, forceful motion, or else you may be causing fracture or little, you know, knocking off bits of cartilage as you do the reduction, and we don't want to do that. And then finally, you know, these should, you know, call the orthopedic surgeon, let them be evaluated by us. We can evaluate for fractures, soft tissue injuries, and then eventually the patient will get, you know, always radiographs, but then we'll evaluate if they need like a CT scan or MRI or further imaging. That's it, if there's any questions. So just a little point here. This is a sugar tong, and so these are sugar tong splints. So now you know why it's called a sugar tong splint. I remember when I first kind of picked that up, I was like looking at sugar tong. I'm like, that's why they call it a sugar tong split. It was like an aha moment for me. So I'm giving that aha moment to you guys right now. So All right. Any questions?